A new report from the United Nations warns that countries must take drastic action to rapidly curtail greenhouse gas emissions. The Emissions Gap Report underscores that countries must stop the development of planned or projected fossil fuel projects. We're joined now by Alex Beacham, who is the Northeast Regional Organizer of Food and Water Action. So Alex, what does Food and Water think of this new UN report, and what are some of the key points that it's making?
Yeah, I mean, thanks so much for having me. The report is alarming, to say the least, right? So this is a new UN report saying that right now global temperatures are on track to rise as much as 3.2 degrees Celsius by the end of the century. You know, scientists think really we need to limit warming to 1.5 degrees to avoid some of the most catastrophic effects of climate change. So that's obviously alarming. I think from our perspective, the most urgent task for all of us, for policymakers, political leaders, and really the global climate movement, for all of us, this report ought to be a wake-up call that we need to demand solutions that cut off the supply of fossil fuels at the source. You know, we don't have time anymore to waste on carbon trading or some other neoliberal market scheme to try to lower emissions. We've got to cut them off at the source, and this report, I think, really underscores that.
So did the report itself, take a position against, the various carbon trading and carbon tax proposals?
I mean, the report is just saying the path we're on, right, and how alarming it is. But to us, it really highlights that what we're doing right now, whether it's the Paris Accord, whatever other minor progress we've made on climate change is just not anywhere close to fast enough. And so to us, I think it really underscores the need for a much, much stronger approach.
Right. Now, I know, of course, Food and Water Watch has been, active in many of the fights in New York State around various fossil fuel infrastructure. I know you have an event coming up in the governor's office, I believe, around December 11th or so. But, also you've been quite active, particularly on the Williams pipeline. What's been going on? How is the governor really reacting to this idea that you have to, immediately begin to halt, fossil fuels? Obviously, just recently he took a pretty strong stance against National Grid, who was claiming that they couldn't hook up any more natural gas customers because he wasn't getting the pipelines they wanted, and he threatened to take away their permission to operate in New York State, and they agreed, oh, I guess we found some new sources, and we'll pay you $36 million to stop beating up on us. But where is the governor on, let's halt fossil fuels, period?
Yeah, it's a mixed bag, right? I mean, in some ways, I think the governor has taken some really strong actions on stopping the supply side of fossil fuels, right? Going all the way back to the ban on fracking 5 years ago. This administration's also stopped several pipelines. We won a huge fight on the Cayuga power plant, which would have been a refired, old coal plant that they wanted to transition to a gas burning plant. That was killed this summer. So, there's some real success stories. I would say in every instance where the governor did the right thing, there was a huge movement of people pushing him to do that, right? That really he's following the grassroots lead. And I think like most politicians, Governor Cuomo responds mostly to political power. And so if you build enough of it, you can win some of these fights. Now, that's only part of it, right? At the same time, he's approved the Cricket Valley power plant, which is under construction now in Dover. He obviously approved the CPV plant in Orange County, which is now operational. And he did all of that when it was abundantly clear that we shouldn't be building any new fossil fuel plants at all. So he's by no means all the way there. But I think that the note of hope there is that, the climate movement is bigger and louder than it's ever been. And if we all can keep building it that way, I think you can really begin to make it politically impossible for anything new to be built. And look, we all know that's only the very basic first step, right? After that, you've got to start shutting down all the existing fossil fuel projects across the state. And that, if anything, is just a harder fight, but one that we can ultimately win, and frankly, one that we have to win.
Well, I know in the Capital District, a lot of groups, including Food and Water Watch, had fought against the governor's proposal to put new gas frack turbines in on Sheridan Avenue to not only heat the Empire State Plaza, but to provide electricity, microgrids. And eventually, after several years of organizing, he agreed to, okay, we're not going to put new gas turbines in here. We'll use solar for our renewable energy. But he did not agree to stop the six gas boilers that are still at the Sheridan Avenue facility, which is providing heat, steam, basically, you know, for the state capitol, and that's been going on, you know, for a year or so. But one project, you know, we've heard a lot recently on WOOC, Hudson Mohawk Radio Network, about Cricket Valley, since a couple of us got arrested down there. But Dam Scammer has been another project a little bit south of the Capitol District, and I know you guys have been passing some resolutions about that. You want to give us a quick overview of Dam Scammer and where that's at and what next steps are?
Yeah, so it's similar to Cayuga in a way. So this is originally an old coal plant that then transitioned to natural gas as a peaker plant. So what that means is on peak demand days, it fires up, right? So the hottest days of the year when the electric grid has the highest demand, all these peaker plants fire up. So there's now a proposal to transition that into a baseload facility that would just run 24/7, basically, right? So you're talking about way more emissions, way more power. And so this is something we've been opposing from the start. This is in Newburgh, you know, right on the Hudson River. And it's early in the process, right? It's very unclear what the administration will do. But to me, the grassroots energy around this has been really phenomenal. There's, I think, 11 towns in the Hudson Valley that have passed resolutions, including Newburgh itself, all of them urging the governor to stop this thing. And they're more in the works, right? I think when it's all said and done, we'll have 20, maybe 30 resolutions against this thing. So that's really, really good news. You know, and this is sort of going through this wonky Article 10 process that I won't bore listeners with, but basically it's very early on, right? And that's important because when you can build a movement early in the permitting process, we've seen that we've been able to get this governor to stop it. So I'm very hopeful on that one, but it's going to take a lot of work. And certainly, at least in the Hudson Valley, there has been an enormous amount of energy and activism around it, which I think is, you know, is our best hope.
Now, one of the things that came out earlier this week is a new report from some scientists who sort of raised the alarm that, in fact, you know, increasing evidence shows that the idea that we're going to pass a tipping point where climate runs away and, you know, civilization as we know it comes to an end may in fact be much closer than we anticipated, not at, you know, a 4 to 5 degree centigrade hike in temperatures, but actually even in a 1 to 1.5 degree centigrade, which is sort of where we're at the present time. How did you react to that news?
Well, it's just more confirmation that we need to do more much faster, right? So there are all these tipping points out there, right, from the Arctic ice sheets to the permafrost to drought in the Amazon rainforest. And what's truly alarming is that, you know, we know a lot about these things, but there's a pretty high level of uncertainty of when exactly they happen and how much warming it will take for them to happen. And so I think, you know, a lot of us who work in this stuff all the time, I think it's easy to sort of just put blinders on and go on and do the work. But when you really take a step back and look at it, you realize, you know, the news on this, right, on climate change, we know more and more about it from a scientific level than we've ever known before. And what's increasingly clear is the old models, if they were wrong in that they were too conservative. And so I think, if anything, it really underscores that we need to be calling for sort of maximalist demands, right? We've got to be pushing much, much, much faster than we are now. You know, New York is barely lowering its emissions at all. Globally, our emissions are still going up. And almost daily, you have a story that's recommending truly drastic year-by-year emissions cuts. And we're just nowhere near to it. So, you know, somehow we've got to get our tipping point of our own and have the climate movement be so strong that we really just have some sort of paradigm shift of how we're dealing with this, because to the extent there's been progress on climate change, it's just not fast enough.
Alex Beecham, we're out of time. Food and Water Watch, your website?
Yep, it's foodandwaterwatch.org.
And this has been Mark Dunley for the Hudson Mohawk Radio Network. Alex, I want to actually continue for a few minutes beyond our playtime. I know that the Food and Water Watch is part of this Green New Deal movement in New York State, but one of the things which I believe you actually just wrote an op-ed about was the idea that that public power taking over the utility companies might be one of the solutions for climate change. Why have you decided to push that issue?
Yeah, I mean, you know, we've begun to see, I think, the limits of what private utilities can do. And to me, the fight over the Williams pipeline and National Grid's extraordinarily extreme reaction to it kind of underscored the need for a whole new way of dealing with this, right? And it's particularly important where the natural gas utility doesn't, where the same utility doesn't own gas and electric, right? Because as you try to switch away from fossil fuels, every single thing you could do that's helpful for the climate means the natural gas utility loses money, right? So you're either electrifying heat and then the utility's losing that customer entirely. You're engaging in energy efficiency measures. That means less gas. That's less money. You're switching to something like geothermal. Again, that's less money for the gas company. And so you start to realize that this private profit incentive is in many ways, at least on the gas side, directly at odds with anything meaningful that we would do on climate. And I think it's only going to get worse. You know, as the gas guys continue to see the writing on the wall, I think you're going to have more and more really hardball tactics from those utilities, like we saw in the Williams pipeline fight, where they just tried to bully the governor into approving a pipeline by making up a gas supply shortage. Thankfully, the governor basically called their bluff, right? But I think it really does show the limits of the current model. And we think if you put control of the utilities in the public's hands, and importantly, have real democratic processes that allow the public to have a meaningful role in weighing in, right? That how you structure this really matters. You could have a bad public utility as well,
like LIPA, right, Long Island Power Authority. They're not
exactly
so well.
Like LIPA. Yeah. So you've got to do it right, but we think we can, and we're excited to fight for that this session. There's going to be a series of bills in this next legislative session in 2020, so we're excited about it.
Well, let's finish up with why don't you give us an overview of the Green New Deal, which I understand also includes trying to shut down, stop new fossil fuel infrastructure. But what are the other components besides public power and the fossil fuel infrastructure of the Green New Deal, and how do you expect to elevate the campaign in the coming months?
Yeah, so a series of a bunch of groups came together to try to create a field-focused coalition that would fight for really transformative change on climate issues. And so we kind of coalesced around these four demands. One is no new fossil fuel infrastructure. The second demand is 100% renewable energy. The third is taxing the rich to pay for all of this, to pay for a just transition, but to pay for a Green New Deal for New York more broadly. And then fourth is public power, which we just talked about, putting the control of the utilities back in the public's hands. So we're really excited about this. The whole idea is that we want to organize and push around big demands that are hard to achieve, but would really kind of meet the scale of the crisis we all find ourselves in. And crucially, demands that we think we can organize around, right? This is very much kind of an outsider-driven campaign versus, starting with the lobbyists and what you think you can get passed and then trying to organize around it. We're really trying to do it the other way around, right? Starting with what people in the field actually care about. And I think we could build a huge movement around this. So we're obviously excited about it.
Well, I know one of the groups, it's you, New York Communities for Change, New York City DSA, and also the Sunrise Movement. And I believe on December 6th, the Sunrise Movement nationally, but certainly I know here in the Capital District, are doing a number of events to promote the Green New Deal, including, I believe, some type of sit-in at the governor's office. So is December 6th an event that the New York campaign is going to be promoting?
Yeah, we will. There's so much going on that day. It's also another climate strike day. So in the city, I think a lot of folks' energy will go to that. It's another huge day where the youth are leading and having a big climate strike. But yeah, we will. And it's also a busy week. So on December 4th, just 2 days before that, the governor's having his annual birthday fundraiser, and we'll have a huge crowd of activists outside.
You
that
just love going to his birthday events.
We do love the birthday events. They're fun. We'll have birthday hats. So that'll be fun on December 4th in the city. You know, and it's part of a longstanding campaign, right, to be outside as many of the governor's events as we possibly can. Just yesterday, we were outside a speech he was giving as he was handing out turkeys in Brooklyn.
Does he come out and take selfies with you?
He hasn't taken any selfies. He smiled and waved yesterday, so that's something.
Okay. Well, thank you, Alex Beecham, Northeast Regional Organizer, Director for Food and Water Watch. And this has been Mark Dunley for the Hudson Mohawk Radio Network.